Welcome to Farm to Table Talk, where we talk about our food and how it's grown. I'm your host, Roger Wasson. When can we say that non-traditional behavior has become a trend? And when does that trend start easing into the mainstream and become a norm? Well, I don't have the answers, but count me as one who recognizes trends in food and farming and elements of those trends that are becoming close to mainstream. Our Farm to Table Talk will continue to discuss the issues and developments that are shaping these trends. Along the way, we'll keep our eye out for bridges that help conversations move forward to match our appetites for food and food philosophy. Sustainable, conventional, organic, artisan, industrial, small scale, large, urban, or country. Well, while organic is still a very small percentage of the food we consume, it is undeniably growing at a very brisk pace. At an Organic Summit conference, attendees heard trend forecaster Susie Badaracco of Culinary Trends explained trends from all-day breakfast occasions to garden-in-a-glass cocktails. In the perimeter of the conference, complete with background chatter that sounds strangely like recess at a school for chipmunks, I asked Susie what she hoped people learned from her.
I think one of the most important things that they don't think of off the top of their head is to look for alliances within the industry. So to not think of themselves as separated, like organic versus not organic, but also play in all the other trends that organic can hook into, like the breakfast trends and the plant protein trends, the farm to table, but happening in the cocktail scene. So there's a lot of arenas you can look to as an ally to your produce that you have to remember to keep in the back of your mind to make sure that you're still playing on a three-dimensional playground.
I got to ask you a follow-up question then about the breakfast trends. Where did that come from? I mean, before you knew it, you've got McDonald's offering breakfast all day long, and you got eggs being offered about like on anything on the menu, lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Where did this come from?
It's kind of twofold. Part of it comes from the recession, because in the recession, that's when eggs in particular, everybody started having little backyard chickens and so forth. But also going forward with the economic recovery, we start watching the numbers going up for eating breakfast outside the house, so on the way to work and so forth. And that doesn't happen in recession, it only happens in recovery. The breakfast all day trend kind of got born from that because of a trend called clockless eating, which means 10 years ago, our eating hours for Americans were about 8 to 10 hours a day. We would eat for about 8 to 10 hours a day. Now it's expanded to 14 hours. So we're literally kind of eating around the clock, and snacking has gone around the clock. And so that's why breakfast, it was natural for it to start traveling out of the morning hours and start going into the evening hours and then even later than that, and infiltrating the snack arena too.
You mentioned the protein trend too. What's that mean?
So again, the protein trend kind of started way back in 2004 with Atkins looking at, you know, kind of villainizing carbs. And other trends were born off of that, like the paleo diet and other trends that kind of tout higher protein. But where it's shifted now is because of researchers. They know consumers are starting to learn that animal protein, you can have other problems. You can have kidney issues. You can have cholesterol issues. So here comes plant proteins. So plant proteins have just invaded in the last couple of years, where they've been stealing share from the animal proteins. But you're still allowed to have a higher protein diet if that's what you want, except with less physical fallout from the animal proteins. So that's why I was saying today that the plant world, organic, can also play in that high protein trend to look at it as there's lots of alliances because the plant proteins are kind of now giving animal proteins a run for their money.
Well, then the final trend you mentioned that I really caught my attention. Did I hear you right? Did you say farm-to-table drinks?
Oh, yeah. It's called garden-to-glass. So there's, you know, head to tail, and there's farm to table, and there's garden to glass, and there's root to stem. And I mean, there's all sorts of hilarious terms, but garden to glass is the one that's hitting the cocktail scene. So cocktails are kind of leading, you know, beers and wines and so forth. They're kind of the rock stars. And so culinary cocktails are just a really strong element where, you know, beyond muddles where you're taking herbs and you're muddling it into the drink, there's just all sorts of vegetables and fruits being processed now into the cocktails in bars all over America.
Well, and also bars all over Portland. I mean, you're loaded with all these local breweries.
Yes.
And they're all over the place. I mean, they're all advertising that their barley came from here and their hops came from there. And is there any end in sight in that trend? It seems like everywhere in the country now has got all sorts of choices of beer.
Yeah, and it's funny because Portland has the largest number of microbreweries in the United States, like per capita. And so, yeah, it's just part of the sustainability trend again, where food sourcing is very interesting to many consumers. Like, what it does is it makes them feel grounded and kind of safe, and it actually causes them to trust a company more if they know where the barley came from or where the hops came from, for example. So it is in the beer industry, but it's in all parts of the food industry. You find that too. And so it's part of a trust issue that consumers have. And so that's why knowing where the food comes from or who the farmer is actually gives them a calmness and more trust in the company that's, you know, being able to put out that message.
Well, we're going to have to come up to the Portland area sometime, not only try those beers, but also go out and find these guys that are growing all the grain, because I run in some of the best bakeries around, and they're all saying that they're getting their grains from Oregon. And the whole grain loaves of this and that in the different places. And there's a bunch of farmers up there in Oregon that are producing whatever it takes to be able to be this kind of sustainable whole grain flour.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And yeah, Washington is in with that too, with their Palouse region, which is where lentils are coming in from and all sorts of grains also. So yeah, we're kind of partners in cahoots.
Trends are only significant if they actually transition into behavior, such as an actual business, like an independent restaurant. To hear firsthand in a noisy restaurant kitchen, we ask Pam Burns, the chef and proprietress of Wild Plum, how and why she's pursuing her dream of making people happy with food that she's proud to plate.
What triggered my commitment to organic was having the very, very best and the cleanest ingredients and have food that I feel good serving to my customers. I mean, we have always made everything here from scratch, always. We've always made, you know, every single ingredient from scratch. You know, I mean, we make all of our own, we make our bread, we make our pestos, we make every spread that goes on every sandwich, you know, we roast our own meats, and we've always done that from the beginning. And that has always been for quality, you know, just for freshness, for quality, and for purity. You know, I mean, it's really about ingredients. It's, you know, it's like three things, you know. It's a commitment, it's ingredients, and it's execution, you know. It's a commitment to those ingredients, it's the ingredients, and it's the execution. And the people that you have that can also be, because you can't do it by yourself. I mean, nobody does it alone, that's for sure.
Well, you source locally. Let's talk about that, too.
I source as much as I absolutely can locally, you know, and that's growing every day. But, like, for example, I think for all small restaurants, that's a challenge. I mean, for example, I don't know if it's okay to name any names, but,
sure.
But you know, like Whole Foods, which I think is wonderful. They've done some amazing things, and I think they're real leaders in their industry. But they're also, you know, anytime you have a company that's sourcing, you know, a lot of and dairy from small vendors, it makes it not as accessible to other small vendors. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, for example, Mary's Chicken. Mm-hmm. I used to get Mary's Chicken. That's what we use. That's who our vendor was, because she's in Northern California, local. You know, that's as locally sourced as I could get on chicken.
Right.
And now I'm getting from Coleman Farms, which is a little bit further down south. But a lot of her products became very hard to get, and I didn't feel good about the I didn't feel good about the turkey that I was getting. I felt like the breasts were very small, which meant the birds were very young. So there was a combination I was having to get in 40-pound lots, you know, frozen. And so I make choices based on freshness and quality and who's making it, the way that they're farming, especially when it comes to meat. That's probably, you know, as far as vegetables go, I have a walk-in full of vegetables that are just grown in a 20-30 mile radius.
And you probably know most of the farmers.
I do. And this is, but meat and cheese, dairy, that's the challenge. We're an everyman cafe. So if somebody comes in and wants a turkey sandwich, you know, it's not the same as being a restaurant that has 10 items on their menu.
Right.
And it's just what's happening now. We've got a bakery, so we've evolved. And we are actually, you know, there are things that we're taking off of our menu because we want to be more sustainable. Like salmon, we're not going to do salmon on our menu anymore. We're going to do, you know, we are moving to doing a smoked fish. And it will be whatever is sustainable, we're going to smoke it in-house. And I just feel like that's a commitment that I want to make to the ocean, the Ocean Conservancy, is that we're not going to do traditional salmon.
Well, you were early in organic, but when you're sourcing, I mean, organic, one of the main things is the lack of pesticides.
Oh, of course.
And so but there's more than that. I mean, you're talking about freshness, and do you get into knowing like the story of varieties or anything else on the production practices?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like for example, I mean, you know, we get our trying to use heritage wheats is also very important. And of course, organic flour is very, very important when it comes to that. But, you know, we've just now this year, every year we make a commitment to something else. So this year we're now getting our whole wheat products from Coke Farms, which is just right here. And we use their Blanco Grande wheat for all of our wheat. So not only is you can't get any fresher than that. It's being grown and milled locally. So, and of course, it's organic.
No, we want to slow down there. So you're getting wheat locally, too. That's not something you normally think of in California. You think of wheat usually coming from
there's a huge movement to bring another really wonderful company. It's called Community Grains. They started, I think, 5 or 6 years ago. And they're bringing the heritage grains back. Because that's one of the issues. So one of the issues with the whole gluten intolerance is the lack of choice and what has been programmed into the wheat, which is really incredible. I mean, you know, when you're buying commercially grown wheat, you're buying wheat that has been 9 times out of 10 genetically modified, and things are programmed into that wheat, you know, to make it drought resistant, all these things, you know. And so some of those wheat fibers are practically indigestible and not recognized by the body as food, you know, really, you know, when it's breaking it down. So so the whole food thing and genetically modified foods, it's a very complex issue. It's not, you know, and more than, so there's all kinds of things that are on my mind when I'm buying ingredients. One is, being GMO-free is very important to me. And we're not 100% GMO-free because I don't have 100% organic dairy. I mean, 90%, but some of my cheeses are not organic. So we're working on that, you know, but I would say that knowing my source, making sure that there's no antibiotics, certainly there's no antibiotics in my dairy at all. I would not use it if there were, but all of our milk's organic, our half and half, our eggs, all of that is organic. But the biggest issue is having a good variety of cheeses that are organic and affordable. You know, again, we're an everyman cafe, so I'm not going to charge $18 for a turkey sandwich.
Right.
You know, so
well, your job is harder than a lot of restaurants used to be. It used to, every morning early this time, you'd see a great big truck out in front and somebody had called the distributor.
Yeah.
And this one-stop shopping, and it would seem like, first of all, it'd be a lot simpler for you if you were just doing one-stop shopping again and call them up and say, I need this, this, and this. So instead, you're sourcing, you know, each of the farms. And I'd also suspect it's more expensive. I would guess that maybe the commodity suppliers
absolutely.
Are cheaper.
Oh, of course. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I just walked through Smart and Final the other day. I was picking up some janitorial supplies, and they had eggs there for sale for $11.49 a case. You know, I pay about $45 for a case of eggs. So, you know, an organic egg is four times more than what a regular egg is. You know, two or three or four times more, depending on where you're getting it from. And but at any rate, so yeah, but I think, again, dedicated to the ingredients, and, you know, it takes a village. I mean, in our case, it takes a farm village, you know, to keep us going.
Oh, and it takes customers too. I want to kind of wrap up because you're baking biscuits and everything else, and it's a busy time in the back of the kitchen. But do your customers recognize that? I mean, I suppose you got to be a few dollars more for some of your items.
I would say we are. I think we're very reasonably priced, but, you know, we are all constantly adjusting our prices. And, yes, we have customers who eat here because, you know, that they know that we're organic, and that everything's fresh. That's the other thing that we hear all the time, is the freshness of the ingredients is the thing that made their breakfast. You know, it's not unusual for someone to say, this is the best breakfast I ever had, these are the best pancakes I ever had. And I think it's a combination of things. It's a combination of taking, you know, some your craft that you've been working on, you know, and continue to evolve in over 30 years, and then you take that craft and you marry that with, you know, great ingredients again. You know, I mean, I think Thomas Keller said it best. It's two things. It's ingredients and it's execution, you know. And I think that whether you're a Thomas Keller, you know, who I think is wonderful, or you're, you know, there's a voice for all of us in this mix. And the more of us that are using organic ingredients, the more educated everybody is. So I just think the whole organic movement, it's a journey. And all of us play a part in it, you know, by bringing on the very best ingredients we can, knowing where those ingredients come from. I have some people that are not certified organic, but I know how they farm. I know them. I know they're not using pesticides. And that's what's important to me.
So it's a story, then. It's not necessarily whether they're certified.
That's right. Oh, absolutely. It's where it's coming from. How are they treating their animals? What are they doing? What's their journey? What's their story? You know, that's what's important to me.
Well, this is important to me to get these questions answered, and I really appreciate being back in your kitchen. I just want to kind of wrap up with another question, though. It's kind of excuse the pun, so the chicken and the egg kind of question, and that is, on the one hand, you were describing as sourcing gets better and better, and farms that are now doing ancient grains that are near here and others. Have you seen, in the time you're in the business, a lot more farms that are catering to restaurants like yours? And so new business are getting started.
Oh, absolutely. I had some folks, a young couple, they're really sweet. They came in one morning, they ate breakfast, a darling young couple sitting at a table, and then they waved me over and said, oh, our food was so good. And they said, hey, we're new farmers, we're going to be working with all the organics over in Salinas, and which is an amazing company. There's like a co-op, and they rent plots of land to people, and then you have all these farmers doing various things on different plots. So it's really it's an amazing thing. But they said, what do you need? What can we grow? So they're going to be growing peppers and carrots and different things for me. So, you know, and that's just taking time. But I have, you know, being able to get my tomatoes local, it's so amazing that I can do that now and do it consistently. There's, even though it seems like we have lots of tomatoes, it's really only been in the last 5 years that I've been able to get those kinds of products locally, you know.
And finally, I mean, what do you say to people that say, well, this is wonderful, but we're not going to be able to feed the world with these approaches?
I think the thing I say is they were feeding the world with these approaches before we went into commercial farms and trying to mass produce a particular grain. And I think that what people are doing now is what people were doing in my grandmother's time. And you know, maybe we're not going to be able to feed the world from Iowa, but we're going to be able to feed the world by reintroducing these practices on a smaller scale and around the globe, not just here, not just at home, but going where, just like Alba Organics is making this commitment where you have these different farmers. You take a land, you lease it. You know, you don't even necessarily own the land. There's just there's a huge movement to rethink land use and how it's being used and what's going on. And, you know, that's another conversation. But if anyone's interested, another wonderful group that's doing a lot of work of putting social on food entrepreneurs with investors is called Slow Money. And they are, and they have education events, and they're an incredible group in Northern California, and they've got clubs all over the United States. But again, it's just this education. It's this education and a lot of this ground movement, this almost food revolution that's going on right now of rethinking what we eat, where it came from, and how it's produced. And the consciousness involved in the ingredients, and it really starts, and it really can start in the most simple way for every person by just flipping over whatever you're picking up, if it's a packaged good, if it's not a fresh food, and reading the ingredients. Even if it's a prepackaged fresh food, flip it over and see what is in that package. You know.
Well, Pamela, I'm going to ask you one more thing, and that, sure. And that is that we have listeners really around the world, a scattering of people in Europe and in other places, and many of them end up making their way to Monterey. So I'll let you give a plug here for your restaurant. We've been hearing all the things, and I'm back here in the kitchen seeing you produce. So how do people find you if they want to check out, they want to come here and try your restaurant, what we've been talking about?
Well, we have a website. It's called thewildplumcafe.com, so they can find us that way. They can look at some of our menus online, which are always changing. We're at 731 B. Munras Avenue, Monterey, California, the Wild Plum Cafe.
It's worth a trip, and I'm sure we've got some people listening that will take some inspiration not only for growing for a restaurant like yours, but being a restaurant like yours that are, you know, all over the United States now, there are people that are pursuing dreams, and it sounds like you've been able to pursue a dream. And
oh, absolutely. It's a love of a lifetime. I mean, it's a lifetime journey, and I thank all of us that are on this. I heard Grant Achatz being interviewed, and he said, you know, his parents owned a coffee shop. And he said, I don't care if you're a diner or you're a three-star restaurant, like the one that I now own. He said, all of us are cooking for the comfort of others and the pleasure of others and the sustainable to sustain somebody else. And that pleasure, that giving that to that love and joy that you see on someone's face when you've created a meal for them, that's what I'm always cooking for.
Boy, you can't top that. And thanks for sharing that on Farm to Table Talk. And it's a great restaurant, but it's an even better story. So thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thanks for having me. That's just been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk. Join us again on Facebook or farmtotabletalk.com, where you can follow us on SoundCloud, or go to iTunes, where you can subscribe to receive regular podcasts. And while you're there, please give us a review and a rating on iTunes. Thanks again for listening to Farm to Table Talk.